It's time now for Tournament Fever with Travis Krenz on KORN News Radio, FM 101.3, AM 1490, and online at KORNradio.com. Tournament Fever brought to you by Agronomy Plus in Mitchell, Valley Station in Armour and Rock Creek in Howard, C&B Operations, your local John Deere dealer, Precision Grading LLC, and Mitchell Hearing Aid Center. Now here's your host for Tournament Fever, Travis Krenz.
And it is Tournament Fever Day number 2 here at the Equality Inn and Suites on the north side of Sioux Falls. Travis Krenz and Marcus Raxler here this morning going until 10:30 today as we kick it off here with head coach Riker Kreitzfeldt of the Mitchell Colonels. That classic game yesterday, 3 overtime, 78-77 game that folks are going to be talking about as long as they're living. That's the type of game that was. I think yesterday you talked about memories and moments, and this is being an experience. You still have 2 games coming up here in this tournament. You got Yankton today, and you got a Sioux Falls team tomorrow, but good or bad, I mean, that experience yesterday, a lot of kids don't get to experience something like that. 3 overtimes, that doesn't happen very often.
No, and a lot of kids don't get to experience a state tournament in general. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to enjoy being here because it's hard to get here and it's hard to get back, and you don't know when you'll be back. but yeah, you know, some people, it depends what side of the coin you're on with mm-hmm. yesterday's game. It's either an exciting game, fun to watch, or it was a tough game, you know, because if you're a Harrisburg person, then you're probably feeling pretty good about it. If you're Mitchell, you look at, you know, missed opportunities, turnovers, free throws, things like that. But, you know, one thing I thought was really cool, you know, we at this group this summer, we had a tendency to kind of go at each other a little bit mm-hmm. and disagree and point fingers and do all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we got after that game, you know, there was none of that. You know, all those guys, they were talking about what they could have done and they were disappointed in themselves. So it's been cool to see how much these guys have grown since the beginning of the year, maturity wise.
You mentioned yesterday that, you know, the minutes stood out. You know, how many minutes those guys played. Cade played the whole game. You had guys that played 40 minutes. You don't see that in college basketball. I mean, what do you take away from just how much effort was expended, you know, in a great effort by your team?
Yeah, it was commendable. We didn't want to play them that many minutes. And, you know, the deal is, like, we're just not a team that's built to play 3 overtimes. And, That's just not who we are. You know, you think, well, you could have got them a break earlier. You could have got some of these guys in. Well, if I knew we were going to play 3 overtimes, I probably would have got them a break earlier. But if we did that, I don't know if we'd be playing in overtime. No. That game may have been over in regulation. So, unfortunately, that's where we're at. And the deal is we got a lot of guys who are 1 year away from being varsity players. And, you know, we're going to – obviously now we're going to get to see some of those guys today because there's just no way. You know, mm-hmm. these guys are going to be cramping up at the – media timeout of the first quarter today. So, but those guys, like, this at the beginning of every overtime, it was just like, I know you're tired, you just gotta figure it out because we gotta get through this one and figure it out tomorrow. But I'm proud of them. They battled their butts off.
Did you change anything this morning considering the long game here last night?
No walkthrough. And they're probably all still sleeping right now. And then we got breakfast in the hotel or in the coach's room so they don't have to get up for Continental. And then we're just gonna go to the gym and play a game. You know, that's, you know, once you end up in the Sunshine League, you just kind of try to enjoy the experience and try to put your seniors out on a high note, and that's what we're going to try to do.
And developing that depth here for next season, you lose 3 seniors. You've been out without Macon Larson here for a while, and Gavin Dagan's played a couple minutes, and Hinker's the big one. But developing that depth, who may we see here coming up here later on today at noon? Gavin Soakup, kind of that guy that's stuck out here the past month, but anybody else that we may see that we haven't seen in here in a while?
Yeah, you know, Soakup will play, and Dagan will play more minutes, and Jackson Childs need to play today. I don't really know. I don't know. It just kind of depends how the game goes, how far we go into the bench, but it'll be those 3 guys for sure.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, when you look at those 4 games yesterday, a lot of All-State talent on the court. It just seemed like the best players were shining through in all those games. That's probably what you want the state tournament to look like, when those top players are really performing at a high level.
Yeah, every team who had their guy who needed to play well played well, including us. So it's fun to watch. You know, it's a really nice tournament we have this year. Everybody is good. Everybody can beat everybody. Unfortunately, it turned out to be chalk for us in AA. But it's going to be a great tournament, and you know, you're happy to be here, and you don't want to be where we're at right now, but it is tough to get here. And It doesn't matter who you have or who you're playing or what team you are. It's tough to get here. So you gotta, once you get here, you gotta enjoy it and you gotta play hard.
A great crowd on hand. I mean, both sides had a lot of people. Look like Mitchell had a few more than Harrisburg, but student section wearing their green, the black and gold of Mitchell, right behind us there at the table. I mean, it looked like a great crowd yesterday for Mitchell.
Yeah, it was. The crappy part is, if we had won that game, it would probably be double that today. Now it might be half that today, but that's all right. That's kind of what I told at our pep rally yesterday was, you know, Mitchell state tournament is just not quite the same when Mitchell's not in it, because Mitchell brings a great crowd. It's kind of like we need to get it back there, but it used to be just like a vacation. It's a holiday in Mitchell, the state
spring
tournament.
Break.
Yeah, it's spring break, and that's where we got to get back to. And we got two in a row here, and we got a big thing is like these last two games, even though they seem unimportant, can be really important. You know, you win your last two going into the off season, you feel a little bit better about things, and not many teams get to win two games in a state tournament. So that's going to be our goal, and we got to start with getting this one done today.
I mean, you may see a Yankton next year in the semifinals. You may see Lincoln next year in the championship game. Who knows what's going to happen? So these games coming up here the next couple of days do have some importance to them. Their two big guys had big game. I mean, 25 points for Detterman, but he was 8 of 21. And then Merriman had that winning layup, but he also shot 21 times for 26 points. So they get 51, but they shoot at 42. And Hinker looked like he was on Merriman a lot of that game, and Solik was on Detterman for the most part. So they scored a lot of points, but it was a game and a half was played, and they shot it 20-plus times. So defensively, Marcus pointed out, they're undefeated when they score 60. You held them to 55 and a regulation 59. It took them a long time to get to that 60, and you kept their two guys relatively in check yesterday.
Yeah, well, and, you know, Hinker's doing that, playing 44 minutes and doing everything offensively for the most part. So, you know, it's tough because, you know, those guys are two hard guys to guard, and Detterman, we saw it yesterday, he just needs an inch, and he's going to make a three. And he did. He was 3 for 3 in the first half, and I thought Dylan did a really good job on him. And I thought Hinker did a pretty good job for how many minutes he had to play on the Merriman kid. So I was proud of their effort, but unfortunately it just wasn't quite enough.
The weird thing that also stood out to me is how well you guys shot two-point shots. You know, the threes were not going down, all the weird things that happened in the game, but the two-point field goals, you made a lot of close baskets, and the shots you needed to make, it felt like you made at least inside the arc.
Yeah. You know, that's kind of been our identity. You know, we haven't been a team that shoots a ton of threes, even though we have the ability to make them. Yesterday was, like I said, these guys just followed the game plan perfectly. We had too much size for them. We had to go inside, and we did that. We just couldn't, not even so much couldn't get enough stops. We just had too many turnovers. That's really the difference in the grand scheme of things. It wasn't the defense. It wasn't the shooting. It was the turnovers and the missed free throws. But I was proud of our guys because we didn't have any heroes. We didn't have anybody go away from the script that we wanted to play. They all stuck to it, even when the highs and lows of the game, they kept going inside, and that's what we asked them to do.
Riker Kreitzfeldt joins us here for a few more minutes as he gets ready to take on Yankton here. It'll be a 5-seed Mitchell, 9-seed Yankton, coming up here at noon, the first game here in Sioux Falls. The technical on the dunk on Dylan Solik, were you given any explanation of what that was? Because that seemed, at least, you know, from our perspective, we've seen that a half dozen times this year, a Solik dunk, and he didn't do anything differently than he usually did.
I think he may have used
some language
word,
okay.
which is fine, and that's a technical foul. But we are pretty close to the court, and I think there's a couple magic words that get thrown around out there. So it's tough in that situation, and especially, you know, you lose by one with a technical foul. But it is what it is. It is a technical foul, and we deserve to get it.
19 for Charlie McCardle. He was outstanding, had a lot of points in that first half. He was the leading scorer for a lot of that game. 19 for Dylan, 29 and 13 for Hinker. Hinker's been so close to that triple-double. I think we were saying last, you know, he's been an assist or two away from a triple-double. He had 5 blocks yesterday, so he's still got 2 more games to maybe get a very rare triple-double, but physical game. There was a couple of jersey changes. I think Zane had to change his jersey last year in the game. He wore the Larry Bird 33. So, I mean, it is physical against Harrisburg. There is blood all over the place. He had Hinker had to tape up his elbow. I mean, is that just the type of game you expected against Harrisburg yesterday?
Yeah, well, that's Hinker's used to that. He's
getting beat up all the time.
He gets beat up all the time. And, you know, he shoots a lot of free throws, but I'm just telling you, there could be he gets beat up so much and grabbed and held in the post. There could be even more fouls. Mm-hmm. You know, he's compared to the rest of Double A, he shot a ton more free throws, but it could be a ton more. But yeah, it was a physical game, and that's just state tournament basketball.
Mitchell and Harrisburg last night, a great game, 78-77. Anything else, Marcus? I mean, Yankton here coming up today, another good matchup. And again, they got some guard play. They got a big guy down low. You've seen him before and played pretty well against him at the Corn Palace a couple months ago. So, I mean, they gave Roosevelt everything they could handle in that 1-8-1-9 matchup. So they're a 9 seed, but they're still they knocked off Aberdeen. They're a pretty good 9 seed, it looks like.
Yeah, they are good. And, you know, that's a team that I don't think a ton of people expected to be here.
No.
So this is
another one.
Yeah, it's another tough matchup for us, and it's going to be a really similar game plan. You know, they're going to play us kind of the same way Harrisburg played us. We actually had breakfast with Coach Haynes this morning. Mm-hmm. We were both crying away about having to play at noon, but it is what it is. You know, every time you get to play in the state tournament, it's a good opportunity, and it's going to be a tough one. They're going to play five-out motion, and we're going to have to try to go inside. They're going to make it tough on Hinker. It's going to be really similar to yesterday.
You have the media timeout, so that's a plus to maybe get some rest. Do you maybe use more timeouts just for rest purposes, or do you see how the game flows here today?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll figure it out.
Let them play.
I think we'll figure it out about 3 minutes. Some of these guys just aren't going to have much in the tank, and That's the crappy part is, you know, you have to win the first game. So if you think that you got to save these guys because it's a long tournament, mm-hmm. it's like, well, if you don't even win the first game, then
what's the point?
What are you saving them for? And I mean hindsight's 20/20, but so I think mostly we just have to have some guys step up off the bench, and they're gonna have to play some minutes, and they will because they've been ready for it. So I'm excited for those guys to get a better opportunity today.
Riker Kreitzfeldt joins us here, Tournament Fever, live in Sioux Falls. Coach, amazing game. I'm sure you've heard about it, and that's all you thought about the last day or so. So we'll see you there this afternoon against Yankton and see how it goes.
Yeah, you know, one quick thing, like mm-hmm. one thing that's interesting is how quickly kids are able to move on. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a quiet bus, but once you get back to the hotel, these kids are just kind of, they're already joking, and they're already like, we get here last night and I had to tell a couple rooms to be quiet because they're wrestling around. Like, in the end, I'm telling you, these guys, what they care about is this experience, and they get it over a lot quicker than the coaches. We were in our room till about 1:30 last night, crying away, trying to figure out how we're going to play today. And while they're playing NBA 2K in their rooms, having a good time. So
yeah, it means more to the fans almost and everybody that follows the team. And you got the players like, you know what, we lost, we can't do anything about it. It was a great game, and we'll have that memory forever. So
it really does. Adults usually pout more than the kids do after those games.
There we go. Riker Kreitzfeldt joins us. Coach, good luck here.
Yep, thank you.
We'll have Corey Odlin coming up next. Mitchell Activities Director. A lot to get to with him. And we'll have Cole Knipling as well, Mitchell Girls Coach. And we'll look back at some of those games from yesterday as well. Not too many upsets, Marcus. We had another overtime game there in the Class B tournament. But not a ton of upsets on either side here, Class A or Class B from yesterday.
No, some close games. You had Sioux Falls Christian Challenge Dakota Valley, and you had winner almost, you know, pull off the comeback against Sioux Valley in Class A, but you know, two good games in the night session at the Class B tournament in Aberdeen with White River and Lower Rule. That's the matchup I've been looking forward to seeing tonight. So good to see those two teams advance, and Freeman Academy Marion, kind of that upstart co-op, gave White River plenty of a fight last night. So, and then in the Double A tournament, I mean, exactly the point I made to Riker. You saw the stars show up in the first round, and that's what you want to see. So.
And again, only the top four seed that didn't make it, there was winner, and we talked about how good the six seed Sioux Valley was when they blew out Hanson, a pretty good Hanson team, by 30 points last week at the Pentagon, or a couple of weeks ago, and Sioux Valley. I mean, they were runners up last year. So of all the games coming up here, I mean, Lower Brule, White River sticks out to me. I don't think any Harrisburg has anything left for Roosevelt. A different situation. Maybe they give him a game. But yeah, you look at that St. Thomas More Sioux Valley matchup. For me, that's the big one today.
Yeah, and Potter County has been plucky all year. They only have one loss. I mean, you're playing a really good DeSmet team. I would expect DeSmet to win, but Potter County certainly potentially game for an upset.
And we're here at the Quality Inn and Suites, north side of Sioux Falls. We'll talk with Corey Island coming up next here at Tournament Fever. We're back in 2 minutes on KORN.
The seasons are changing, but the quality and service you've come to expect from Agronomy Plus remains the same. Call or stop in to finalize your 2022 cropping needs, as Agronomy Plus offers the latest in precision ag and high-quality fertilizers. Don't have your crop protection purchased yet? The team there has you covered. from Enlist to Extend and everything in between. Truly locally owned and operated. Call Agronomy Plus in Mitchell, Valley Station in Armour, or Rock Creek in Howard for all your spring needs. Agronomy Plus, a proud supporter of Mitchell students and athletes. Spring is here, and C&B, your local John Deere dealer, is here to make sure you are ready to get back into the field. Head over to your local C&B to get yourself a new John Deere planter or schedule inspections to make sure your equipment is as ready as you are for spring. Whether you need new equipment, service, or parts, C&B is your partner in agriculture, here to help you succeed. Visit C&B online at DeereEquipment.com. That's DeereEquipment.com.
Like competing on a level playing field? For site grading and soil stabilization, call Precision Grading LLC. Specializing in laser and GPS leveling, property elevation and drainage solutions, cement-treated soil, driveways, parking lots, box culverts, roads, and more. Let the experts at Precision Grading LLC help with your next farm, commercial, or residential construction project. Just call Jared at 605-656-0016. Precision Grading LLC, serving Mitchell and surrounding areas, and a proud supporter of high school athletics.
Hi, this is Caden Hinker. My dad is Clint from Mitchell Hearing Aid Center on Mitchell's Main Street. I'm a senior at Mitchell High and playing in the state basketball tournament in Sioux Falls this week. Our current team has had a great season, and now we're ready to give everything we got at state. Thanks to everyone for cheering us on. Can you hear the excitement? Go Colonels.
It is Tournament Fever here this morning on KORN News Radio. Coming up here on 10 o'clock, we still have Mitchell Girls head coach Cole Kniplane to join us, and also a Mitchell AD Corey Odlin joining us here this morning. And Corey, great game yesterday, obviously, for the Colonels, talking about the big crowd and the support. And I was in the hotel there watching the Jacks game, and there were a bunch of Colonels getting ready for the game right there. So, I mean, unbelievable game, obviously, and it looked like a great crowd in Sioux Falls here yesterday.
Yeah, kind of what we expected as far as crowd. You know, I knew, it's been nice this whole year to kind of get back to a normal. You know, last year I think there was the interest to come back.
Yeah.
But with all the COVID restrictions, we couldn't do that. So nice to see this whole year just the crowds kind of come back. And we certainly saw that yesterday. And, kind of what I expected, and really see it. Happy to see the turnout in the sport.
So got some of those spring sports just kicking off. You've had some nice weather here, so hopefully they can get outside here next week. You've had, you know, gymnastics, another runner-up finish. You had got to host gymnastics this year, and of course girls tennis wins another one. When you kind of look back at this year, what are some of those highlights? You had Jager Tyler state title. You look back, you get back to normal this season. What have been some of those highlights that stick out for you?
Yeah, certainly some of those big highlights with some of those championships and things. But really what I'm trying to do, and what I would like to see us do, and I think we're getting there, is try to bring some more of that consistency on a year-to-year basis, where we don't have the highs and the lows, so to speak. I mean, obviously more of the highs and try to keep those lows, more mid-range type of thing. So that becomes a lot of work. It's a lot of work on the coaches, a lot of development with young kids and those type of things, so we don't have those dips, so to speak, in some of that. So that's kind of been a big focus for us, across the board, is to try to keep things consistent where we're competitive on a yearly basis.
I want to go back to the state gymnastics meet for just a minute. I've gathered that the reviews from the SDHSA and the schools involved were very good, almost to the point where they'd be up for having it in Mitchell every year. It sounds like maybe you wouldn't be up for that, but
that'd be correct.
Just tell us a little bit about what went into that process, and I guess what does it mean to have people regard their time in Mitchell so well.
Yeah, it's great to hear. And I think what that event did was really showed what we can do in Mitchell. The type of experience, the type of event that we can host. So that was what I was most proud of, is hearing those that great feedback. What people don't realize, or maybe they do, but don't fully realize, is the amount of work in gymnastics. Mm-hmm. We had over 200 people involved, as far as moving equipment in, working the event, tearing it down. I mean, it's just a beast of an event. A lot of work, a lot of people. When you host a state basketball tournament, you need 10 people and a rack of balls. When you host a state gymnastics, you need 40 people a session and $120,000 of equipment. So it's a beast. But yeah, great to hear the feedback, the positive feedback that people had. It was really, really great experience. I'm proud of the event that we put on. I'm just happy with all the work, you know, the work that we did behind the scenes.
One thing that I think maybe people would appreciate you kind of filling us in on is when we have a state tournament like this, Mitchell comes to the state tournament, you're paying the cost to participate, right? And then there's a reimbursement, right? So walk people through that, you know, as far as Mitchell's not bearing all the costs necessarily for participating in a state tournament like this.
Right. The state refunds certain pieces of it. You know, there's up to 12 rooms and some of those type of things. So we certainly bear some of those costs, but yeah, we definitely, you know, the state does reimburse us for a portion of it, so it's a little bit of a split cost essentially, sure. I guess, but we do pay for some of it, but we get reimbursed for some as well.
I think of some of these small towns, you don't want to go in the hole going to the state tournament because it can become a big thing, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, so it's one of those things when, I mean, everyone wants their teams to advance and those type of things, but the financial aspect, there certainly is a cost involved, but sure. That's the cost of winning, I guess,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Corey Odlin joins us here at Tournament Fever live in Sioux Falls. Possible expansion, some changes at the Corn Palace. What have you heard? What do you expect? And whether that means hosting more state-to-state gymnastics meet, maybe a state tournament, who knows? What have you heard about changes at the Corn Palace and how that could affect you guys?
Yeah, I was involved in some of the group discussions that they had here a few months back and seen some of the, you know, preliminary designs, and certainly that would put us in what we need, you know, from a facility standpoint. Again, going back to the experience that we provided with gymnastics, that proved that we can put on those events, but we're limited by facilities right now. Mm-hmm. We don't have the facility to bring in, you know, a basketball tournament or some of those big overnight ones. So if that can get done like they're talking, in that, you know, 4,200, 4,800 mm-hmm. seats. They were definitely in the conversation for having a girls state tournament for sure. And I think, again, the experience that we showed with state gymnastics, you know, proves that we can do that.
And the big talk a couple of weeks ago was that combined tournament with the girls, you know, or the boys going all at one time. How do you feel about that? Do you think that's feasible, or is that maybe something you try for a year? You see how it goes. Where do you envision state tournaments going here?
Yeah, you know, everyone's got their opinions yep. on that. I would say we're certainly traditionalists mm-hmm. in South Dakota, especially when you start talking basketball.
Yep. We got a shot clock finally, thank God.
Sure, right, yeah. So so I could see it possibly coming in. I think what needs to happen is we probably need to work out the details. You know, it was presented as more theory.
There wasn't a lot of meat to the bone. Yep. There was like, here's something. Well, how yep. do we do this?
Okay. Right. So I think in order to get any buy-in, we need to really sit down and, you know, someone's going to have to sit down and say, this is exactly what it looks like. This is when these games are played. This is where those games are played. And I wouldn't be opposed to, you know, putting in a rotation. You know, mm-hmm. we're always 3 years out for those tournaments. The idea of putting it out 1 year, try it, and then, you know, we can come back to it if we want to. So I don't know. That'll be interesting. I don't know if we're ready for that type yep. of thing, but there's a lot of states that do it. So mm-hmm. there's certainly some models out there that we could follow.
Mitchell Activities Director Corey Odlin joins us here. Tournament Fever as the Colonels get ready for Yankton today in a consolation semifinal here at noon. Softball coming up next spring. Where does that stand right now? And baseball, where is any talk about baseball getting sanctioned as well? Let's start with softball as far as next spring softball here getting sanctioned in South Dakota.
Yeah, we're, you know, starting those conversations about, you know, some of the details like that as we go into our, you know, our district hiring, our teacher hiring here for the spring. A softball coach will certainly be a part of that, so we'll have a head and assistant softball coach for that. Had conversations with the Park and Rec, so we're set on that, so we need to, you know, fine-tune some scheduling, you know, get some equipment purchased, and we'll be ready to go. So excited about that, more opportunities for our girls in high school. And as far as baseball,
has that been brought up, or is there momentum for that? Or are they okay with the way they do things?
My understanding is that they're okay mm-hmm. With where they're at. I don't know that they have the interest to be sanctioned by the state like softball did. The softball group came to us, and mm-hmm. they wanted to be sanctioned. I don't know that there's that type of interest right now on the baseball mm-hmm. side, but I did think You know, when we were starting to talk softball, I knew that if softball went, baseball would be the likely one that would, the discussion at least would follow. So nothing now, but we'll see what that looks like.
Historically, that's been the way it's been, that the high school baseball organization hasn't wanted to be sanctioned because they can play with wood bats. High school, you know, NFHS uses aluminum bats, you know, and they've, you know, South Dakota was kind of ahead of the curve on the pitch count thing, and they kind of set their rules on that. So historically, that has been their reason to not be sanctioned. They've had a little bit more flexibility on the rules and playing on Wednesdays and Sundays and different things. So, you know, that you maybe lose that if you are sanctioned.
Yeah, there's some possibilities there. So, again, next spring softball sanction here, and they got, what, club in the fall, and that'll continue.
Yeah, so the club season will remain. We'll stay there. We won't have anything to do with that. Our girls will be able to go out for that and then play also in the spring as the high school.
Corey Odlin joins us here. We also have Cole Knipling coming up here in just about 10 minutes or so. You got Riker Kreitzfeldt right there. Great first season for him and the Colonels. What was it like, his hiring process throughout the spring and the summer when Todd Neuendorf decides to leave? A lot of different candidates. What stuck out about Riker and his enthusiasm here for Mitchell basketball?
Yeah, you know, he didn't approach it that way, but he essentially had a 4-year interview, you know, with his involvement in the, and I just saw the work that he put in. You know, nobody realizes how much work our coaches put in, you know, across the board. But the amount of work that Riker put in, you know, behind the scenes with scouting and, you know, game review.
Kind of that dirty work, that behind the scenes stuff that nobody sees.
Yep, absolutely. You know, and I remember specifically watching a game of a few days after we played, watching our game film, and we were on defense, and someone made the team made their second pass, and he stood up and started pointing over to the other corner, and about four passes later, that's where the ball went. Like, he knew one pass into that set where the ball was going, and that just shows the amount of work that he puts in and the effort and the time that he puts in on the scouting. The scouting reports that he puts together are unbelievable.
Yes, they're very nice.
We had to see one yesterday. Yeah, impressive.
When teams get done, he could probably hand it to them, and they could give that to their players.
There you go.
Because there's your playbook. Yeah. He has that much. He's that thorough. So, you know, the challenge with the head coach is that there's so many things that aren't basketball related when you're the head coach. You know, the media responsibilities, the organization of fundraising, working with the parent groups. I mean, all those type of things that an assistant coach doesn't have to do. Those are the things that I've been even more impressed with than what I knew. I knew he was good on the basketball side, but it was, can you be able to manage all those other things? And I knew he could, just based on the work that he'd done. And he's really, really, he's proven me right, I guess, so to speak. But yeah, really, really proud of him. He's a great hire for us. Love to keep a good young Mitchell kid here in town. You know, to be able to give a young guy an opportunity like that, for me, is something that's been really fun.
And the entire turnaround here of Mitchell boys basketball, going back to Todd Neuendorf's hiring and kind of the architect of this thing, getting things back on track. What was it about him that he was the guy? And you look at what he did, and things are back on track now.
Yeah, you know, just, you know, with him, it was just the history and the proven success that he'd had, you know, at the Class A ranks. So, yeah, I mean, you look at this 5-year turnaround, essentially, that what this has been, and you look at, you know, this is the team that's getting all the spotlight right now. But you go back to all the kids that played on those first teams and the coaches. I mean, this has been a long process, but really great to see it, you know, kind of happen how you want it to, you know, how you envision it, how you plan it. Doesn't always go that way, but we're certainly training in that direction. Just going to continue to get better and better every year. And when you look at kind of where we're at, you know, specifically with the boys basketball program, we're in a really good spot for a long time. You know, we've got, you know, when you look at some of our sub-varsity records and some of those things, and everything changes, of course, as those kids mature and you know, the teams change, but just seeing that kind of success top to bottom has been really fun, and that's what we're trying to build.
I would just point out, I mean, there were 42 losses in a row. I mean, it was tough.
It was as bad as it could get, and then
and I would also say there were 42 losses in a row. They didn't deserve to lose 42 in a row. I mean, there were some games where it slipped away, and I mean, those kids worked really hard, and so you kind of you pay those hard pains on the front end, and some of these kids now are getting to you know, reap the rewards of that, and you know, it's been impressive just to see the hard work from players and coaches and everybody involved to have something like this, and then, you know, you appreciate it a little bit more when you go through that. So.
Yeah, certainly there is. Corey Odlin joins us here, Marcus Traxler as well. I'm Travis Krenz here, just past 10 o'clock. We talked about this a couple months ago, Officially Human, the referee initiative. Tell us a little bit more about that and how you got involved.
Yeah, so, you know, it's no secret that we've gotten a shortage of officials. We've worked on, you know, I officiated for a little over 10 years before I took this job, so I saw it firsthand. But we've really kind of come to a bit of a breaking point, you know, that boiling point, we've kind of reached that. So I got involved with teaching an officiating course at Dakota Wesleyan with the sole goal of trying to develop some more kids and get more kids in line to try to get them involved. And through that, Kelly Pfeiffer, who's a Mitchell guy that I've been friends with for 15 years, I brought him in to speak, and he'd connected me up with Brenda Hilton's, the name of the lady that has founded, her and her husband founded the Official Human, and I just actually had a conversation with him just yesterday, Wednesday, talking about, you know, kind of the next step, so to speak, and the whole thing is, we need to figure out, people need to understand, you know, that these people are out there doing the best they can. You know, they're not professionals.
Not against your team. They're just trying to call the game.
Right. Yep. And you know, literally, if they're not there, the games don't happen. And we've been really creative on the athletic director side to figure out our way around it. You know, you see some of the Class A and Class B schools going to doubleheaders, and you know, we're scheduling games on off nights that we're playing on Mondays, you know, at times when we don't want to, but that's the only time you can get officials. We're moving football games to Thursdays and Saturdays, and we're doing all these things to make it happen, and all we're doing with that is covering up the problem. So there's going to be times where games won't happen because we don't have officials, and that's unfortunate. But it almost feels like we need that to happen for it to really be, you know, kind of a smack in the face to say, yeah, we need to change this. So I've been really vocal within our programs, within our community, to try to change that, try to, you know, kind of be on the front end of that a little bit. I've been really encouraged by the amount of awareness that we've seen across the state, you know, just different social media posts and some of those type of things. They haven't been branded as Officially Human, but all the stats and all the information that they're sharing is that. You know, that's exactly where it came from. It's some information that I had sent out to a lot of our ADs. So I feel like the awareness is good. You know, that's the good, but we're not done. You know, we need to continue recruit more people. We need to change our behaviors. We need to be better. You know, and for me and Mitchell, the guys that come in and do our varsity games, they're in it. You know, they've been through the ringer a bit. They've ref 3, 4, 5 years at a minimum. They can, you know, they're not going to get run out of it.
They can handle it.
Yes. But my 7th and 8th grade officials, my sub-varsity high school officials, those are the ones that we need to make sure we bring them along and we protect them. Because if we run them out before we ever get started and they get established and they kind of get through that meat grinder of the first few years, you know, we'll lose them and they'll never come back. And I think at the B&A school, you know, as an official, that's kind of where you come up through, you know, some of those. And so we need to do a better job across the state at especially those new officials that get them in. And, you know, if you can't come in and work 7th grade basketball and learn – and be awarded some grace to be able to make a mistake sometimes, you know, where am I supposed to get officials at if that's where we can't start? And you go to youth sports, and it's even worse than that. Mm-hmm. So we really need to change our approach to officials, and in all sports. Basketball seems to be the worst, I think, in my opinion, as far as a shortage, but we've got it everywhere. So just trying to bring that awareness, and it's been good, but we're gonna continue to do more work and keep that on the forefront of people's minds.
Kind of goes back to the point of the players are playing their video games, and then the fans are so into the game that, you know, they think about it throughout the rest of the week. And
I mean, two things I would say is, one, I know from experience that at the college level, you know, there are people, I know at South Dakota State this was the case. I was one of them. I happen to have a job that conflicts with officiating now. But, you know, there are people that they officiate intramurals and they officiate certain things, you know, maybe some junior high stuff around where they're going to college. And it's easier said than done to foster those people into actually officiating at the high school level and so on and so forth. But those kids are there. I've seen a couple of my colleagues from there that officiate high school games around South Dakota. And it's good to see that they've followed it through to that point. And the other thing that I would say is it's not, you know, basketball is a hard sport to officiate. Wrestling, you see that at the state wrestling tournament. Track and field, there's one guy who's running around the whole course, you know, officiating, 20 races or however many they are. They're all hard jobs, and exactly what you said, a little bit of grace goes a long way for appreciating what they're doing when they're making sure that these meets and events get off. So,
I mean, when you officiated, you go back maybe 10 years ago, did you see it trending in a certain direction? Is there a certain something you can look at and say, this is where it took a turn, or is it just every year it gets maybe a little bit worse until you get 10 years down the line and then something has to change?
Yeah, I started in about 2006, I suppose, and it was being discussed then. Mm-hmm. You know, so this is not something that is surprising to anyone that's been involved, administrator, official. Mm-hmm. Something that's been discussed for a long time, that it was coming. You look at the number of officials that are, you know, 5 years from being done versus the number that we have that are in their first 5 years, and the numbers don't add up. We've got a lot of them that are, we've got a lot of them that have held on a lot longer than they would maybe like to, just to be able to continue to keep kids playing. So we've known it's coming. We've kind of hit that breaking point that we're there. You know, we are in crisis mode. And I think maybe pandemic stuff, you know, had a little bit of effect on it. You know, we had some guys step away that and just haven't come back. But I mean, you see a lot of older. You know, when I started, it was always said it's a graying profession.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot more gray out there than what we need it to be. No offense to any graying officials, but we need to get more young people involved, because if we don't do something different, if we see these, you know, these older officials be done, we don't have the numbers to fill them with some of the younger people.
Officially Human, again, they got Twitter, Facebook, they got websites, you can all check it out there. Officially Human, trying to get ahead of that shortage of officials and initiatives to get more of those officials involved. Anything else, Corey, again, as we come up on those spring sports, still a busy time of the year for track and field and everything else?
Yeah, well, just, you know, looking forward to wrapping up this winter season, and we're already into track, we're already into tennis, golf will start here shortly too, so... we roll from one to another. Hopefully we get a nice
hopefully it pays
weather
like this.
If we have this for the
rest of next week, we'll see.
Some days it doesn't feel that way, but I mean, the school year has flown by. I mean, it's just, you know, you blink and then all of a sudden you're here. It's the state tournaments, and when that snow starts going away, you know that the spring sports are right around the corner. So
getting to the end of the season, still a couple months to go here. Corey, thanks for coming down here. A good conversation here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Corey Odland joins us. One more to go. Cole Knipling in the cleanup spot, we'll call it. There we go. He likes that. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Tournament Fever coming up next here on KORN.
Mitchell Hearing Aid Center wishes the best of luck to the Mitchell Colonel boys at the state tournament. Those extra hours in the gym have paid off, and it's time to get on the court and give it all you've got. It's been a fun and exciting year watching you working hard and playing smart. We're all very proud of you. Let's go, Colonels, from the Mitchell Hearing Aid Center.
It is Tournament Fever here in Sioux Falls. We have about 20 minutes or so to go, and we're only about 2 hours away, less than 2 hours away from tip-off here, a consolation semifinal. Mitchell and Yankton at noon today. Pre-game show starts at around 1:45. Final guest, the best for last, Cole Knipling joins us here. Coming off the girls' season, the 8-game winning streak, the start and the end, very unique season. We've talked about it all year. What was it like that game against Sioux Falls Lincoln? That rally at the end, you're down 14-15. You cut it down to 5. Quite a very unique season, to say the least.
Yeah, it was. Felt, you know, a lot of highs, a lot of lows. You couldn't have been any happier than you were at the end of the 8-game win streak. You couldn't have been any more down than you were when we were 1-6 or after we gotten absolutely drilled for five games before that last one. But, you know, we had a lot of hope, a lot of optimism going into that last game, just never quite found the rhythm. You could attribute it to a lot of different things, but really we just never quite got ourselves together offensively until that end when we really made a hard late push, but we just dug too big of a hole.
The chemistry with the team, it seemed like they were a tight group, and you won some games. That doesn't hurt. As far as your experiences are concerned, what creates that chemistry? How much does winning and success get involved with that?
Well, obviously the winning helped. I think it would have been really hard to keep your experience if we would have lost like that the whole year. Mm-hmm. I think that winning streak in the middle really helped that. But also, too, just, you know, you're coming out of these 2 years where COVID was always in the back of people's mind, and to actually kind of get to just relax and go out. And you got to start doing some team meals. Bus rides got a little bit more relaxed, and all of those things I felt help our team chemistry a lot.
One of the things you appreciate when you watch a whole season from start to finish is just how much certain players improve and get better. And, you know, so much is talked about how the offseason sets up improvement, but there was clear improvement during the season from some of your players, and I imagine that's very rewarding.
Yeah, it was very rewarding. It was fun to watch. Like I said, that 8-game win streak was so neat just because the way we were losing games in the first seven became the way we were winning games. Like just we really, really turned some of our weaknesses into our strengths for a while there. We had a really kind of a neat kind of turning point meeting right before we played Pierre, where we just looked at the stats and like this is what we are on paper, and it hurt. You know, you looked at how much we were turning it over and how few assists we had. We weren't sharing the ball. I think our assist to turnover ratio was like 0.3, which is just atrocious. And I think those girls had to see that and understand what that meant in terms of how we played basketball and change. And then also defensively, you know, we were trying to play this, you know, kind of an amoeba zone, which is unique and fun to play, but we just weren't guarding the ball, you know. So it's the idea of it doesn't matter what defense you're playing. If you can't guard the person directly in front of you and you always have to have a second and third defender to stop the drive, we're going to be pretty bad. And so we bought into those two things, being a better assist to turnover team and being a better on-ball defensive team, and it just really changed what we did.
Cole Knipling joins us here, Mitchell girls basketball, and you look at what Sawyer Stabner has done, and she's only a sophomore, and you know, a future all-stater is how you would look at her. And defensively, just her long arms and how athletic she is and how big of an impact she makes on the defensive end to get some easy buckets offensively. Mm-hmm. As a coach, what does that allow you to do to set up your defense, knowing you've got basically, you know, a strong safety back there that can do whatever you want her to do and can create those turnovers so easily?
Well, when we made the decision to go to that amoeba zone, a huge reason why we did that is so that Sawyer could play that bottom line, look for those steals, and help with rebounding too. I think if you looked at when she was out, how poorly we rebounded. But that zone was done in mind with the idea of we needed to have our best rebounders around the basket and put her in opportunities to where if we could have that ball pressure and we could deny the middle and force a lot of skip passes, that with those skip passes we could end up getting a whole bunch of steals. And that's what Sawyer Stabner did. She got a bunch of steals.
She did.
For the layman who has never heard amoeba zone before, yeah. And had you ever had any experience coaching that? How do you kind of come across that? And what does it most closely resemble of the typical zone defenses we've heard about?
It would probably look like a 2-3. The kind of neat thing was is, depending on how they set up at the start, it either looked like a 2-3 or 1-3-1. But that's not really the point of it. The amoeba part comes with the idea that you could start as the low outside of the zone and end up being on the left side, and you could end up on the right side based off of where the ball moves and how it goes. Jerry Tarkanian is the you know, the godfather of the amoeba zone with his UNLV teams back in the early 90s. I kind of got it from T boys were really good, have been really good for a long time. And back when they won their first state tournament about 8 years ago, that they were in our region. And so I was seeing it every single year, and they had some really good teams that were really good at it. And it's, you know, as the ball comes out to the corner, the middle of your zone might go out and the other one X's down. And so I called their old assistant coach last year, and I kind of wanted it. And we used it a little bit last year. I think about the only game you would have saw last year is we beat Rapid City Stevens out there with it. And then we played it against O'Gorman at state too. But this year I just felt like I think I watched us practice for about a week, and I went to Coach Brooks. I said, this has to be us. And I said, we're not good enough to play three different defenses. We're going to do this one. And for a while there, I was really starting to question. About the time we started winning games, I was starting to go, what have I done? Because we were not stopping anybody. And then all of a sudden we kind of figured it out and went on that 8-game win streak.
Cole Knipling joins us here at Tournament Fever in Sioux Falls. Your relationship with the boys team, coaching them, coming over to the girls, just sharing information, sharing ideas. What is that relationship like here in Mitchell, and is it comparable to other schools you've been at, or is this kind of special what we have right here?
Well, the one unique thing is, like, me and Riker both teach math, and so we're about a 10-second walk away from each other, so we got similar prep periods, so we pop in and discuss things an awful lot. And like you said too, I was on the boys' side before the girls' side, so you know, I had Caden Hinker and Gavin and Macon when they were freshmen, and so that's kind of fun. And then you start to you coach all these guys. I have them all in class, so you really get to know them well. So that all makes it pretty unique and special. At the old school, I think the girls coach was out of the building kind of deal. Mm-hmm. So that's tough. But yeah, you know, and it hurts. Like, me and Riker have been talking almost daily about this and that for the last week or so. So to watch that game, it was pretty tough for me sitting there. I was was pretty nervous. And I know where Riker's been. When I was my first year as a head coach, we made state at Oak Point Jefferson, and I played Todd Neuendorf in the first round. And it was an intense game. It was crazy. And we lost a heartbreaker at the end. I can still see, and Riker will remember this, like 12 years from now, Riker will still remember this play or that play that he wishes he could have back. Mm-hmm. I can still see the pass that got stole that led to the time where we lost our lead, and that was killer. So, and then it's tough. This will be a challenge today. The hardest part about that first day tournament, I'll never forget, was trying to win the first half the second day. Because those kids, our game was the last one of the night, and it was so hard to go get there at 11 o'clock and try and turn those kids around to play at 2:15 the next day. We played Bill Vincent. We were down, like, I think we were down 15 at halftime. We ended up losing by like 5, but it was one of those things where it was just too little too late. So he's got his workout out for him today, but hopefully they can get that done.
Hey, just looking over towards the student section, you were kind of standing there in front. Riker was probably number one in intensity. You might have been number two because you were right there. I mean, it was almost like you were coaching the game from behind the baseline. Yeah, so what is it like when it's a team that you have so many connections to, but you're not the one on the bench? You're not drawing any X's and O's.
Very difficult. I think that'll be that's the hard part when you take a step out. You know, when you're a coach, that's all you want to do. That's all you've ever wanted to do kind of deal. So it was anguishing. I was sitting next to Craig Mock, the assistant principal, and I just said, like, I can just feel it in my chest. This is so intense. It was such a crazy game. So many – somebody brought up today, there's probably 10 times we felt like we were going to win and 10 times we felt like we were going to lose. There were so many. The cool thing about that game, I think that, I don't know if anybody's talked about this or not, but nobody ran away and hid. Sometimes you have those triple overtime games where somebody made a furious comeback. Was that game ever outside of 5 points?
No, it wasn't. Harrisburg led by 5 and nobody Mitchell led by 4. I mean, that's unbelievable, that a game like that.
Yeah. And how many lead changes was there?
15, 13.
Yeah. It felt like every possession was a lead change. Yeah. It was just crazy.
Sometimes
that was such a neat game.
Sometimes you see the overtime game and it breaks open. You know, and somebody's up by 9, and in the third overtime, the two teams' best players just start taking over, that was cool in the third overtime to see. So,
I mean, that's just the game. There are certain games and certain sports you just remember, and we've talked about it all day long. That's just one of those games. There's no parallel for that or comparison to really anything else we've seen here recently.
One thing I want to ask about was last week's girls AA state tournament and just how off the rails it got right away with Jefferson. And I know you mentioned earlier, I don't think anybody saw them playing in the third place game, winning third place. Did you foresee any of that? And your season was kind of emblematic of some of that. You beat some of those teams, you didn't beat some of them. Do you look back on that in any way of like, hey, we were right there too?
Well, it makes you kind of wonder. It's like, if you can go in and beat Sioux Falls Jefferson at their place like we did, and then they can go do what they did at state and get third place, it just makes you wonder if we would have stayed healthy and got there, could we have made that run? Could we have surprised somebody like that? You never know. Mm-hmm. You know, though, like Sioux Falls Washington, there was one team all year that I thought looked like they could go get him. It was Jefferson. So when they played right before us. So I watched that whole game when I was scouting Jefferson. Jefferson was up at the end of the third quarter when they played the first time, ended up losing by 3. And so I think deep down they knew they had what it took to win. And so they probably went into that game with more belief than any team would have and pulled it off. And to me, I always looked at Sewell's Jefferson as like they're the scary team for next year. Like next year they're going to be really good. And maybe even in 2 years, they got some really good young players. They just kind of took everybody that was good at Roosevelt and they just, on the girls' side, you know, the boys' side, Roosevelt's still really good. The girls' side, they just got absolutely dissected by that move to Jefferson. So that surprised me. And then you look, too, like, you know, we can feel as bad as we want. It would be worse if you were Huron. Look at Huron. Huron beat Sioux Falls O'Gorman, and Rapid City Stevens, the two teams in the championship game, and they beat them both handily in the last 2 weeks of the season, and they're sitting at home. So that one, at least we're not here on.
And I believe they were up in their SOVAC 16 game as well.
Yeah.
So,
they were, yeah.
Yeah. In more ways than one. Thank goodness. Yeah. Or Mitchell, not here. Yeah. Some of your seniors, I'll take the.
You can say that.
I was thinking it.
That's fine. Sarah Siebert, one of your seniors, does a lot of stuff on the court, does a lot of stuff off the court. She's always making news and has a great future ahead of her. What has she meant, and maybe even more so where she's going, because she looks like she's got it made coming up here. She's had a great high school career.
That's the fun part of coaching is you get to – I always tell them at the end of the year, like there's, as a coach, you're getting to sit in the locker room with future doctors, future dentists, future lawyers, future teachers. I mean, they're just going to go in so many different paths, and you just know the kids that are going to be really successful in life. And that's one of those ones where, regardless of what she was as a basketball player, which I really enjoyed her as a basketball player, you knew she was going to be really successful going forward. I mean, like, look at her and Caitlin Christensen, two of my seniors. They're actually college students this year. They're part of what's called the Bridge Program. They spent the entire year taking 18 credits a semester at DWU. That's really impressive. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like that right there shows you where they're heading, what they're doing, and it's going to be good for them. I think her and Caitlin are both athletic training majors that when you're an athletic training major, you can go anywhere as in the medical field really after that. So I'm excited to see where they're going, and I just think that they're really smart kids in that regard academically. And then they're just kind of funny. Like, they got an entire library of Snapchats of like me with the filters on the face that I never knew they were taking, but they put them all in a scrapbook at the end of the year for me. So I got that memory to go back. And Sarah was kind of a jokester. She would find either a mayo or a sriracha or a mustard packet at whatever place we'd go eat before the game, and it always ended up in my pocket. I'd be cleaning out my pockets at the end of the day, and there was Sarah Siebert's sriracha that I don't even know when she got it in there kind of stuff. So, you learn to really appreciate those kids. I value the four-year relationship. It's one of those things where me and Sarah as a sophomore, you kind of have a so-so relationship just because you're still trying to figure each other out. By senior year, she understands exactly what I need as a coach, and I understand her, and I think that's something that really value and cherish, and I'm going to miss all three of them, Leah, Caitlin, and Sarah.
Yeah, they all had some great moments here this year. As Cole Knipling joins us, the weather's starting to turn, starting to become baseball season. Where do we start getting into amateur baseball mode here?
I got to drop like 30 pounds. That's the first goal. That happens about every basketball season as I get, you stress eat a lot, and then you got to try and lose it all so you don't get hurt. Amy thinks all that's going to happen this year is I'm going to tear my Achilles.
Oh, geez.
Be forced into retirement, but I definitely need to start running, throwing. I just got a text from some of my Mitchell friends that we all go play amateur baseball at Plankton together that we need to start throwing and hitting. So we'll get that going for at least one more year. It's kind of fun. Like, I quit playing when I was down in Elk Point, and then when he moved back here, it's such a fun
kind of the center of the amateur baseball world here, so it's easy to pick it up.
Amateur baseball, and you just want to be part of it again. And I'm making up for last time. I didn't play for 8 years in my late 20s, early 30s, and now that I'm way too old to be playing, it's just really hard to let it go.
Isn't that how amateur baseball works? So yes. A series of 1 year contracts. Nobody's on a long term deal. So,
Is there a home run that sticks out to you? I think you hit one over the scoreboard, maybe in the tournament last year. Is there one that, whether it was in college or anywhere, because heavy hitter.
Yeah,
heavy hitter.
Yeah, it's kind of funny is all of the ones are like on 3-0 count. So I had, in college one time, I was just asking, somebody's asking me about, have you ever hit a 3-0 home run before? And I hit a walk-off grand slam on a 3-0 count in a game in college. That was probably...
What was the score?
It was like 7-4.
So you needed it. You weren't down one. You were down
1-8-7. So it was a 3-0 count. I remember looking down to Bernardo, who's the head coach still at Mount Marty, and I kind of asked if I could have the green light. He goes, yeah, sure, whatever. And boom, there it went. And so then, like, last year, similar kind of deal. We were down in 7-1.
Yep.
Two guys on, really kind of needed it, 3-0 count, hit one. And it was pretty special, too. That was an emotional week. I'd lost my niece. Mm-hmm. And so that one just kind of felt like I had a little extra help, a little boost. And so when that one went out, that was hit it over the scoreboard and Cadwell, that's always kind of neat.
Yeah, amateur baseball season just around the corner. Cole Knipling joins us. Thanks a lot. Pre-game, post-game, all that stuff. We enjoy it. Good group to work with, and we'll see you back probably at the Diamonds here this summer.
Yeah, sounds good. We appreciate you guys. Thank you for everything you do.
Cole Knipling joins us. We're back in 2 minutes. We'll wrap it up here. Tournament Fever on KORN.
Hi, this is Clint from Mitchell Hearing Aid Center. Dana and I congratulate the Mitchell Colonels and surrounding area teams that made it to the state tournament. Your talent, teamwork, and dedication have paid off, and it's your time to shine. Here's to the players, coaches, cheerleaders, fans, and everyone involved with the teams. Good luck this weekend.
Tournament Fever here, wrapping it up. Marcus Raxler to my left here. Cole Knipling, he was great. Corey Adlin was great. And Riker Kreitzfeldt, great as well, joining us here as we wrap it up. Again, coming up here in about an hour and a half, we'll be at the Premier Center, Mitchell and Yankton. We saw that last year. We saw the Brandon Valley game. That was the semifinal after the tough loss versus Yankton last year. And Colonels kind of got blown out there, kind of a back-and-forth game, and really showed back up against Harrisburg for seventh place. So we'll see if we see something similar here today. Tough matchup against a pretty good Yankton team. They don't score a lot, but just that physical toll and that just emotional toll of that game took yesterday on Mitchell's end.
It absolutely did. I don't want to say anything preposterous here, but Yankton expended a lot of energy in their game as well. I mean, they thought, you know, rightfully so, that they were right there with Roosevelt. So I'll be eager to see how both teams show up today. It really comes down to, in the Sunshine League, as Riker put it, what is the want to? What is the desire level here? I'm sure they both want to win, but, you know, if it goes south, does the game get out of hands? That sort of thing. So, and the fatigue factor is just going to be there for Mitchell. You hate to say that, but three overtimes, you don't see that very often. And just how hard they played, how much energy was expended, that's going to be a big factor today.
And AA, I mean, all of these teams that made the state tournament very good. And no matter who they play tomorrow, whether that's the 7-seed Lincoln or if that's the 6-seed Jefferson, that's going to be another tough matchup, maybe even tougher than later on today. Because Lincoln, that was the big comeback, a game where you look at, Mitchell probably should have lost that one, but they come from behind. And Jefferson was just a tough game. That was that first stretch of that Sioux Falls run back on February 1st where Mitchell never really got going against Jefferson. And I think they scored maybe 45 points was all, and then the losses started to pile up. But Yankton, then you got Lincoln or Jefferson. So whoever you play tomorrow, it's going to be a tough matchup.
I believe I said it last year when they were in the consolation bracket, but they give out a big trophy for fifth place. So if you win two, the trophy doesn't say first place, but it's just as large and the same size. So everybody's playing for that. And, you know, to be honest, I think Mitchell would rather see Jefferson. I'm not really sure you want to. I mean, Lincoln did not play well yesterday, so I got to think they're going to be motivated today. And Mitchell stole that game. I think it's fair to say Mitchell could have played better in that contest, but I mean, maybe Jefferson is the one I'd rather see in that third contest.
So again, coming up here, Tournament Fever, we're done. So thanks to all the coaches and players that came around last couple days. Good building here. Quality Inn and Suites, a lot easier for me to say than the American Inn.
You really struggled with that last year.
American. Doesn't make any sense to me. So, 1:45 or 11:45 our pregame show from the Premier Center in Sioux Falls. We'll have the Colonels coming up here against Yankton. Then if they lose, they'll play at noon again tomorrow against the loser of Lincoln and Jefferson. If they win, they're in that fifth place game at 1:45 tomorrow against the winner of Lincoln and Jefferson. So we'll be there. Again, noon tip-off. We're back here in about an hour and a half or so. For Marcus, for all the Mitchell coaches and administrators, Corey Adlin, Riker Kreitzfeldt, Cole Knipling, you've been listening to A Tournament Fever here this morning on KORN.
You've been listening to Tournament Fever with Travis Krenz on KORN News Radio, FM 101.3, AM 1490, and online at KORNradio.com. Tournament Fever is brought to you by Mitchell Hearing Aid Center, Precision Grading LLC, C&B Operations, your local John Deere dealer, and Agronomy Plus in Mitchell, Valley Station in Armour, and Rock Creek in Howard. This has been a sports presentation of KORN Mitchell, a division of NedVed Media, LLC.